This is Nachyomi, Sefer Yehoshua, chapter 24, the last chapter of our book. The book of Yehoshua concludes with a final address delivered by Yehoshua, this time not only to the leaders, but to the entire Jewish people, the leaders and the laypersons. This speech was given not in Shiloh, not where the Mishkan was located at the time, but in Shechem. And it begins with a description of the prehistory of the Jewish people, beginning with Terach, the father of Abraham, who served other gods, and the family of Abraham that were idol worshippers on the other side of the river, as Yehoshua says. This famous segment is quoted in the Haggadah, so it may be familiar to us from Pesach. And Yehoshua here charts the history of the Jewish people, beginning with the Avot, with the patriarchs, Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, their respective children, the children that were the chosen ones and the rejected ones. Eventually, Yaakov and his children going down into Mitzrayim, into Egypt, the enslavement in Egypt, the salvation and redemption from Egypt, the wandering through the desert, the military conquests, and so on and so forth, all for the benefit of Am Yisrael. Yehoshua exhorts the Jewish people to serve Hashem in purity and reject all other gods. However, then he does something remarkable. He presents the Jews with the opportunity to back out. He says to them, are you sure you want to worship Hashem? Are you confident? Are you convinced that you want to do this? Or do you perhaps want to consider worshiping other gods, going back to the traditions of Terach, your great-great-great-grandfather, or going back to the traditions or adopting the traditions of your neighbors, the Gentiles, the Kena'anim, in this area of the world? And he concludes by saying, as for myself and my household, we will certainly serve Hashem. The question is you, what do you want to do? And the people, with one voice, in a resounding manner, say that no, unequivocally, we affirm that we only want to serve Hashem. He has been our God. He has been the one who has been with us, that we've seen is the true God. And we have no inclination to consider worshiping any other God. Yehoshua responds by saying that no, Hashem is too demanding. He's too holy. He's not going to let you go when you make mistakes, when you transgress. And therefore, it's too risky to serve Hashem. Maybe you shouldn't undertake such a commitment. The Jews again rebuff Yehoshua and insist that they'll remain true in their commitment to serve Hashem. Yehoshua makes an official covenant between the Jewish people and Hashem again, places a large rock as a type of memorial to the covenant, saying that it will be a witness, as it were, to this covenant. Right under an oak tree, it says, beside the Mikdash of Hashem, beside the sanctuary of Hashem, which is we have to understand, because this is not where the sanctuary was. The sanctuary was in Shiloh. And anyway, Yehoshua dies at the age of 110 and is buried in the territory that he received in Timnat Serach. The bones of Yosef are laid to rest in Shechem, which was the portion of land that Yaakov had promised he would one day receive. And finally, Elazar ben Aharon, the Kohen Gadol of that time, passes away and is buried. So we see here the end of an era, as it were, the end of an era for this generation, and also the end of an era in terms of Yosef, the story of Yosef coming to its conclusion with the burial of Yosef in Shechem. Now, several important questions can be raised here and really need to be raised. First of all, why do we have two speeches at the end of the book of Yehoshua? Why couldn't Yehoshua consolidate his remarks into one speech? Why did he have to first speak to the leadership and then to everybody? Secondly, we know that the Mishkan was in Shiloh at this time. That's the natural choice of location to deliver a speech. Why is this speech being delivered in Shechem rather than Shiloh? And yet it's described as being near the Mikdash Hashem, near the sanctuary of God. What sanctuary is in Shechem? Third, why did they wait so long to bury Yosef's bones in Shechem? Why not bury them as soon as they came to Israel? Why carry around a box of bones for all these years? Finally, why does Yehoshua go all the way back in his recounting of Jewish history the second time? In the first speech, he only goes back to Egypt, to the experience in Egypt. But this time he goes all the way back to Terach, even before Abraham, before Avraham. Why does he go all the way back there in his charting of history? And why does he even raise the possibility that the Jews would want to give up the Torah and revert back to the idolatrous traditions of Terach, or to go after the idols of Canaan? Doesn't he know that the covenant that we have with Hashem is inviolable? Doesn't he say in the first speech in chapter 23 that no matter what, you are stuck? You have this commitment to Hashem, you have this covenant with Hashem that was contracted at Har Sinai, and you can't back out of it. So why all of a sudden is he giving him the door to leave? So many commentaries have dealt with this problem or aspects of these problems in various ways. For example, the Radak says that the Ark was brought to Shechem for this speech. Very nice, but it doesn't explain all of the problems that have been raised here. And some modern commentaries do try to grapple with and deal with the bigger picture, but nobody that I've seen has provided a comprehensive answer. So I would like to suggest an answer as we conclude the book of Yoshua that I find to be persuasive and meaningful in its own right. Perhaps you'll find that it doesn't answer all of the questions that have been raised, or maybe you find that it answers some but not others. I leave that to the judgment of the reader, and I'm certainly open to other suggestions and ideas coming from those who've been studying along with us. But I'd like to offer some thoughts of my own, with your permission, that the book of Yoshua is really, in a way, a postscript or epilogue to the Torah. It describes the fulfillment of Hashem's promises to the Jewish people, and in that way, it's really the conclusion of the historical narrative that begins with the enslavement in Egypt. Really, the national narrative, if you will, is what's being described to us in is coming to a close at the end of the book of Yehoshua. So what we really see is the end of the story of the Exodus, the end of Yetziat Mitzrayim, and that is a national story. So the first speech of Yehoshua in chapter 23, presupposing this inviolable absolute covenant that the Jews have with Hashem, is really dedicated to the nation as a whole, and therefore is addressed to the leadership, not to the individuals, because it's the leaders who are responsible for making sure that the covenant on a national level is observed and kept. So we could say that in this way, really, the story that began in the book of Shemot, the beginning of the book of Exodus, is coming to its close at the end of the book of Yoshua. At the same time, we have to look at the story of the Jewish people not only on a national level, but on an individual level as well. Because after all, everything begins in the book of Bereshit with promises made to Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, their story, their family drama in all its complexity. And when we look at it from that angle, and from that vantage point, we find an interesting pattern. That when Abraham comes to Canaan from Ur Kasdim, he first pitches his tent in Shechem, Ad Mekom Shechem, Ad Elon Moreh. This is exactly where Abraham finds himself in when he's first promised that he will be the recipient of the land in which he is residing. When Yaakov goes to live with Laban and then returns from living with Laban, from his exile, as it were, he purchases a parcel of land in Shechem. Before leaving Shechem to go to Bet-El, he instructs his household to get rid of all their idols and to divest themselves of all their idols, which is exactly what Yehoshua says in our chapter here. And it says that he places them under the oak tree in Shechem. He buries them under the oak tree in Shechem. And here we have, again, Yehoshua telling the people to get rid of all their idols, which we must wonder, what is he talking about when he speaks of idols? And they're at an oak tree in Shechem again. When Yosef is seized and sold by his brothers, it was because he went to Shechem to look after them. When Yaakov blesses Yosef at the end of his life, he tells Yosef that he's going to receive Shechem Achad Alechecha, an additional Shechem, which can mean a parcel of land, but means specifically he's going to receive Shechem. So we see that Shechem is a key location in the story of the patriarchs. Many, and there are many other examples of this as well, but these are highlights that many of the events that are significant in the drama and the lives of the patriarchs and their journeys center around Shechem. So now when we come to Yoshua's final speech, the fact that it's located in Shechem can symbolically be seen as a closure to the story of the patriarchs. The book of Yoshua then is not just the end of the book of Devarim or the book of, the story from Shemot through Devarim. It's also a conclusion of the book of Bereshit, the stories of the patriarchs. And therefore, Shechem is the ideal location for this speech. And that's why Yoshua is addressing the people not as a nation. He's not speaking to the leaders of a polity, but he's speaking to them individually, as families, not nationally as citizens. And therefore, he says, listen, even though the covenant with the nation of Israel is absolute and will never be broken and would have to be reaffirmed, and it was reaffirmed at Shiloh, at the place of the Mishkan, the national sanctuary, and it was the responsibility of the leaders of the nation to see to it that that covenant be kept, on an individual level, as descendants of Abraham, as members of the family of Abraham, we each have to make a personal commitment. We express it also through Brit Milah, the same kind of concept of Lachniso Berbito Shel Avraham Avinu, to enter into the covenant of Abraham is something separate, it's something individual, it's something done on the household basis. Hence, maybe the declaration of Yehoshua, as for me and my household, we will serve Hashem. In other words, as individuals, we have to make a choice to be committed to the Abrahamic covenant. And that's why Yehoshua addresses this to everyone. And he asks everybody to rid themselves of their idols at Shechem, just as Yehoshua did, because he is referring not to the national covenant, but to the individual covenant, not to the story of the Jews as a collective entity that was born in Egypt, but the Jews as a family that began with Terach and Abraham, the breaking away from idolatry on the individual level, and that whole movement. Yehoshua is a descendant of Yosef, and he dies at the age of 110, just like Yosef died at the age of 110. Their burials are mentioned right here next to each other, with the burial of Yehoshua symbolizing the end of the Exodus story, because he, of course, was born in Mitzrayim with that generation. The burial of Yosef in Shechem is the end of the story of Bereshit. Remember that the final verse of Bereshit describes how Yosef's bones were placed in an Aron b'Mitzrayim. They were placed in a coffin in Egypt and never buried. Why? Because he had told his brothers to tell their children and their children's children to eventually bring his bones with them back to Israel and to bury them. He's been waiting for this moment for centuries, so to speak. We don't have to necessarily assume, by the way, that the Jews actually waited till now to bury Yosef's bones. It could be that they were buried earlier and that the Navi simply wants to connect the event of the burial of Yehoshua with the burial of Yosef. That's one possibility. However, it could also be literally that they waited until now in order to make this point. The point is that conceptually, the story of the patriarchs, the Avot and Imahot, is coming to its culmination with their descendants committing to serve Hashem, committing to monotheism, rejecting other gods, and settling in the land that was promised to them. It's also the end, or the conclusion of the very rich story of the nation of Israel that was born in Mitzrayim, forged through the suffering of slavery and through the experience in the wilderness and the receiving of the Torah, and now finally finding its home in the land of Israel. So it's the intertwining, the interconnection of these two rich narratives, the integrating of them, and the conclusion of them. Sefer Yehoshua is the postscript to the book of Bereshit. It is the conclusion of the story of the patriarchs in the form of their descendants and the promises being fulfilled through their descendants. It's also the fulfillment of the promise made to the nation of Israel when Moshe Rabbeinu came to redeem them, that they would receive a land flowing with milk and honey, and that was the culmination of the Exodus process. And indeed we see that therefore there are two speeches, one speech at the national altar addressed to the leaders of the nation, focused on the covenant made at Sinai that is inviolable and absolute and is more general, and the other one that is given at Shechem, the place associated with the journey and the growth of the patriarchs, the place that was associated with all of their experiences and all of the steps in the development that they went through, and that therefore we recall the history going all the way back to Terach, and each of us as individuals have to liberate ourselves from that same idolatry and make a commitment to fulfill and to maintain and to be fitting representatives of the legacy of the Avot, the legacy of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And on that level, the second speech is the closing of the book of Bereshit, addressing each individual member of the Jewish people as a descendant of Abraham. One question that was asked is, why, if this is the case, is it not first the individual covenant and then the national covenant? But we can say that just as the stories begin Bereshit and Shemot, sometimes you have an ABBA order. You have the Bereshit and Shemot, and then you have, which is, you could say, the stories of the patriarchs and the stories of the nation of Israel. And then at the conclusion, you have the conclusion of the nation of Israel story followed by the conclusion of the patriarch story. In that way, the two stories are fully intertwined with that structure and integrated that way. So we see that this is not ultimately two different stories. Ultimately, it's one big story, but it has two levels, the individual and the national.